Welcome to The Scalpel, where we dissect ideas, not people. Ideas have consequences. Bad ideas have victims. Good ideas have beneficiaries. Hi, I'm your host, Jim Schultz. It's important to know the difference between good ideas and bad ones, between true ideas and false ones. Beyond that, there's the need for discernment. Charles Haddon Spurgeon defined discernment as not the ability to know the difference between true and false, but true and almost true. We live in a time when Americans agree on a whole lot of things. This fact is not always acknowledged. You can read the 2016 RNC platform and the DNC, the Republican platform and the Democratic platforms, and see that most of the issues they actually agree on. But it's those few areas in which we strongly disagree that get so much of the press. Those areas matter, and they often come down to differences in worldviews. Secular humanism is a worldview, and it differs sharply from conservative Christianity. For example, humanists believe that matter is all that exists, that if it's not material, it's not real. Obviously, Christians believe that there are non-material realities in addition to the material realities. So God is not a material reality. Jesus, of course, was in his human nature, but God in himself is not a material reality. Angels, demons, souls, heaven, hell, even logic and numbers, those are real things that are not material things. But if one person is assuming that only material things exist, and the other person is assuming that material and non-material things exist, they're going to come to different conclusions about all kinds of controversial issues, from economics to psychology to ethics, philosophy, history, politics. All kinds of issues, sex, abortion, the environment. And so we need to engage in the cultural conversation in a way that's aware of these worldview differences. But when we talk to each other about these issues, it's often like the Hatfields and McCoys out there shooting at each other, metaphorically speaking. We're yelling, we're name-calling, we're cutting each other off, and just carrying on like cats and dogs. 25 years ago, when my wife and I were first married, we lived in a house we refer to as the Little House on the Prairie, because we lived in North Dakota, out in the middle of farm fields a few miles north of a one-stoplight town in North Dakota. I don't remember what the argument was about, but I do remember her storming out the door, ironically, to a Geostorm car that we were driving, and she got in there and she didn't turn the key and start it. She just sat there looking straight forward, like she was waiting for me to come after her. And I walked out to the car. I was approaching her door from the side, and she continued to look straight forward, not at me. And I reached down and I opened the door, reached into the car, grabbed my basketball out of the back seat, turned around and walked away. Not exactly civility, right? But 25 years and two daughters later, we've picked up a few things that have helped us to get along better. We've learned things about civility, in other words. Civility is about politeness. It's about being respectful towards one another. It's about keeping your cool, staying calm. Cool is the other side of the pillow, as Stuart Scott, the late SportsCenter commentator, would say. The other issue is how we reason, the kinds of arguments we give in support of our views. Google the word logic, and the first page is almost entirely about some rapper who calls himself Logic. There was nothing about the science of reasoning properly until like the third page. If that isn't a metaphor, I don't know what is. We live in a feeling culture more than a thinking culture. Yet, we argue with each other. We just tend to do so poorly. I hope that doesn't sound condescending, but when you know the laws of logic and you listen to the arguments going on in our culture and you pay attention to social media and see how people argue with each other, you can't conclude anything but that we need a little help with logic. Many high school students and college students don't take logic, but this should be taken in elementary school, for goodness sakes. So this show is about thinking worldviewishly, that is, with an understanding of influential belief systems and how they compare and contrast. It's about dialoguing civilly, and it's about reasoning logically. Like absolutely everyone else who has a show or writes columns or talks about such issues, I have a worldview. I have a set of beliefs about reality, a lens through which I view the world. There is no neutral person and no neutral position. Even if you're an agnostic or skeptic or humanist or have absolutely no label you ascribe to yourself, you have some worldview biases. I'll tell you right up front what my biases are. And I know that for some of you, I don't know what you're going to think of this, but I'm a Christian. I pastor Lighthouse Assembly of God. I've taught high school and college courses for decades. I'm a graduate student. I'm a PhD candidate in biblical interpretation and theology at Assemblies of God Theological Seminary. I like playing with ideas like kindergartners like playing with Play-Doh. I like to mash them into shapes, turn them this way and that, and then mash them into another shape. I like philosophy, logic, religions, worldviews, and obviously theology. But that's a little bit about where I'm coming from. Furthermore, everyone who talks about such issues will tend to try to convince others that their view is true on some point or another. And I'm no different. I have opinions and convictions that I'll try to defend and give you reasons to believe them rather than something else, because, of course, ideas have consequences. But even skeptical people will sometimes try to persuade you to be skeptical with them, and relativists who don't believe that there is any objective truth will try to convince you that there is no such thing as objective truth. Agnostics will sometimes try to convince you that you're not necessarily right. There is no ideological neutrality. So what I'm doing is not unique. I'm just going to tend to defend a certain point of view that I invite you and encourage you to critically evaluate. Don't just take things because I said them. Don't take my word for it. Check these things out. Engage in critical thinking. So we're not going to be ideologically neutral. When we evaluate ideas, we'll try to use commonly accepted standards of reasoning, which we'll get into in further shows. We call this show The Scalpel because we dissect ideas. We evaluate them to see if they're likely true or false, and we'll do so civilly and aware of the worldviews in play. I want to take this opportunity to thank KCIW 100.7 FM in Brookings for this opportunity to have this show on their air. And I want to thank our producer, Dane Tipman, who is a smart, courteous, and professional producer. I first met him a few months ago doing a Bruin radio interview, and I was just very impressed with him and the way that he prepared his students. So big thumbs up to Dane. Thanks for being on board. And thank you to Sasha Kay, one of my former students at Brookings Harbor Christian School. He is working with us, doing some recording, and making funny faces at me over there. So I thank you for coming on board. Thank you as well to Oblivion Myth, the band that you heard coming into the show. Their song Venom of Vices from the CD Inside the Mirror is what you heard. They're a power metal band out of Nashville, and you can check them out at oblivionmyth.com. In completely unrelated news, my brother Bob is the drummer for Oblivion Myth. Well, let's spend the rest of the show today defining and defending civility. First, let me give you some reasons to practice respectful civil dialogue with those you disagree with, even about important things. But one caveat here. There are some circumstances that don't call for civil dialogue. I mean, if the other person is advocating something like rape or terrorism or racism, civil dialogue isn't called for. It may call for something more like legal action or correction or rebuke. The problem that we run into is when we assume someone is in one of those categories, but isn't, or may not be. We don't have enough information yet to make a determination about whether they are in those categories. We encounter this in political dialogue a lot today, when someone disagrees with you and you just automatically call them a racist, bigot, hater. We just demonize the other side right out of the box, without having enough information to make that determination. And I find that to be irrational. I find it to be presumptuous. That is, you don't have the information, but you're acting as if you do have enough information to make that judgment. I find that uncivil, disrespectful. That is hurting our dialogue today, just demonizing the other side. And there are ways that people on the right demonize people on the left and ways that people on the left demonize people on the right. And this is the kind of thing we've got to get away from to have civil dialogue. But with all that said, let me give you some reasons for civility. First is the golden rule. Now, as a Christian, you can predict that I would say something like this from the Bible, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And similarly, the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. But I have found that people of various religions agree with this standard. I have found people with no religion, with more secular worldviews, agreeing with the golden rule. You can look this up online and you'll find versions of the golden rule from a number of different worldview perspectives. So we're on common ground here for the most part to say the golden rule supports civility. So would you like it if other people interrupted you, shouted you down, called you names, assumed the worst about you? Wouldn't you rather they be civil towards you? Now, if you'd rather they be civil towards you, then you should be civil towards them. Now, I want to clarify something. You being civil does not guarantee that the other person will be civil towards you. If you're civil and the other person isn't, that doesn't justify you in just opening up a can and just, you know, reading them the riot act, okay? It's not just about the consequences, although, you know, it's more likely they're going to be civil to you in return for your civility. You're going to prevent escalating that thing into a big heated argument, okay? But the real reason that I think we should follow the golden rule is because love, the value that is being upheld and practiced in the golden rule, is an objective value. It's obligatory no matter what the consequences are. But obviously, it will tend towards better consequences than its absence. So first and foremost, the golden rule and love your neighbor as yourself. A second reason for civility stems from virtues and values long held to be good by people from all kinds of different points of view. We talked about love a moment ago, but people usually think self-control is a good idea. That is, that there are some emotions you should not act on, like the anger and vengeance. You shouldn't immediately act on those. You should think through which emotions are worth acting on and which are not. So self-control. In fact, it's one of the four cardinal virtues of Greek philosophy as well, virtue ethics. How about patience? Patience is being able to put up with either annoying or disagreeable things in another person, rather than just immediately reacting with harshness, which brings us to gentleness. Gentleness is better than harshness, right? And again, you don't have to be a biblical Christian who believes in the fruit of the Spirit that includes gentleness to believe that gentleness is a good value. How about peacemaking? Now, the Bible says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. But again, you don't have to believe the Bible to believe that peacemaking is better than war making. How about forgiveness? The ability to forgive other people's offenses, even when they don't ask. I mean, either overlooking the offense or being able to forgive immediately. I think, again, even if you're not into the Bible, you would think that forgiving is better than running around holding grudges. Because holding a grudge is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Humility. Now, not everybody agrees on humility. The ancient Greeks didn't favor this idea. But generally in society, we think that it's not good to be full of yourself. It's good to be thoughtful of other people. Humility isn't a smart person thinking they're stupid or a beautiful person thinking they're ugly. It's just more like self-forgetfulness, that you're not thinking so much about you, you're thinking more of others. Thoughtful would be another way to put it. Listening, the value of listening. James 1:19 says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And again, secularists, agnostics surely would agree that listening is better than just making up your mind without ever even hearing a person out. Now, underlying these things in the Judeo-Christian point of view is the notion that every single human being, from the moment they begin to exist to the moment, actually through their whole eternity, is made in the image and likeness of God. This gives people objective value. That is, their value does not depend on other people valuing them. Their value simply is the case. And so there, we have this obligation to respect each other and treat each other like we're humans and not like we're dirt, okay? So now other perspectives, other worldviews ground human value and dignity differently. But however your particular perspective grounds human value, I hope it does ground human value in some way or another, but we've got to treat each other like the other matters. Another reason to be civil is because people who aren't civil are not correctable. So if you say you shouldn't be civil to oppressors, but you wrongly assume they are oppressors, there's no way to set you straight because you're not going to listen to them as they explain that they are not oppressors and why they're not oppressors. If you just think, oh no, they're just trying to justify oppression. Well, what if you're wrong? Well, you're going to remain wrong for a very long time because your mind isn't open to any other way of looking at that person. You're just begging the whole question at the outset. Don't assume the worst about people. People are innocent until proven guilty. Now, you might immediately say, well, okay, preacher, you are a Christian pastor. Your Bible says all sinned and fall short of the glory of God. You guys are always going on about how people are sinners and need Jesus. Okay. That's true. We are all sinners. We stumble, and that includes me. But when it comes to being charged with specific acts of wrongdoing, our courts rightly assume innocence until guilt is proven. It should be that way in the court of public opinion, too. If you don't have that, then innocent people are punished as if they're guilty. Is that fair? Is that just? No, justice requires civility. And I could even back that up with scripture on another occasion. Now, the last reason I'm going to give you for why we should practice civility is it relates to the consequences of incivility. A lot of people have commented on how much less civil the political dialogue has grown in recent decades. And let's just project it out for a moment to the worst case scenario. And there, I'm seeing more and more people who think that this is growing more and more likely. I was reading an article by David French called, We're Not in a Civil War, but We Are Drifting Toward Divorce. This is on nationalreview.com, where he's talking about if things keep going the way that they are in the U.S., someone is going to try to secede from the U.S. and split this nation in two. Or we're going to end up, you know, with a civil war. Or, I mean, if we cannot be civil, we are going to end up splitting this country in one of these terrible ways. And so, to avoid that outcome, we'd better learn civility. If you want this to remain the United States of America, practice civil dialogue rather than uncivil dialogue or avoiding dialogue altogether, which some people prefer. I think that we can do this civilly. So with those reasons for being civil in mind, now we turn to the task of describing exactly how to be more civil. A year ago, I wrote a blog on this called Civil War, Secession, or Civility on the blog on lighthouseassemblybh.com. And it was inspired in part by that David French article I mentioned a moment ago. But I was passing on five ways to be civil provided from the National Institute for Civil Discourse, the NICD, which is a nonpartisan group. You can check out their statement at nicd.arizona.edu/standards. So here are their standards with a bit of my own commentary. Okay, first, be respectful of others in speech and behavior. So no insults, that's obviously not showing respect, right? No mockery or even sarcasm. Sarcasm indicates that you think the other person is stupid. That's disrespectful and therefore not civil. No slandering the other person or interrupting the other person. That's a tough one now. You have to wait till they finish their statements. No shouting them down, no condescending lecturing, no eye rolling or cursing them out or distorting the other person's position. All of those are violations of being respectful. Second, take responsibility for personal behavior, attitudes, and actions. Your failure to be civil is never the other person's fault. It's yours, no matter how badly they behave. You can't just be like a child, point at the other person and say, well, he started it. Well, you became a part of the problem if you became less than civil. So let's take responsibility for our character and our behavior. Third, promote civility through everyday interactions. Now, you can do this by being friends with people outside of your ideological bubble. Conservatives and liberals can, in fact, be friends. Now, you wouldn't know that from the way things have gone the last couple of years. We've got people kicking, the other political party out of their restaurants, and we've got people unfriending people on Facebook who say anything bad about Trump or good about Trump or whatever it is. And I find this childish, and I don't mean to sound condescending in saying this. I am suggesting that we need to recover the character trait of patience and just love and yes, tolerance, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But we can be friends with each other. In fact, if you want to go back to the Brookings Cafe discussion on religion we had recently, I participated in this a discussion with Ray and Dan and Shirley, and we come from different perspectives, but we all got along. We were smiling by the end and shaking hands and agreeing that it would be good to continue to have dialogues of that sort. So it is possible to have good relationships with people you disagree with. Another way the NICD says that we can be civil is to listen fully and attentively to the speaker, seeking to understand them. When you're listening to a person, you're not just looking for some way to refute them. You're trying to understand their point of view for what it is. Don't presume you know their real reasons and motives. That's one of the worst ways we violate civility, is we assume that everything the person's saying about their reasons, those aren't the real reasons. You just hate blah, blah, blah. That's prejudging people. That's prejudice. That's presumptuous. And it's very often inaccurate. The fifth way to be civil is practice nonviolence, using words to inspire change. We've seen some examples of political violence, people getting really rowdy on university campuses and so forth in the last few years, really. Let's not become a part of the problem by either physically participating in violence or using such inflammatory rhetoric, like demonizing the other side. Let's instead reason. Tell stories. Tell the, why you really think what you think. Now, you might have noticed these standards are not easy, that we are not necessarily doing this stuff naturally. And that's why we have to do a show like this, and that's why the NICD said, okay, we've got to promote civility here. These things, it's not like following a recipe. You don't need character traits to follow a recipe in cooking, but you do need character development to practice standards like this. You need self-control and some of those values and virtues we said that undergirded civility a moment ago. Now, we've been using the word civility today rather than tolerance because I think people tend to misunderstand the meaning of the word tolerance. There are a couple versions of this. Now, tell me if you've heard this sort of thing before, that tolerance is a person not thinking he's right. That the problem in the world is people thinking they're right and that other people are wrong. This goes along with relativism, the notion that there is no objective truth to be known. And so tolerance means something more like just not behaving as if you're right. If you've heard that sort of thing before, you know what we're talking about. Francis Beckwith interacts with that sort of viewpoint in his book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. I've got a couple problems with this notion. One, even obnoxious people are civil to those they agree with. If you don't think that you're right and the other person's wrong, then the two of you agree. It's not praiseworthy to be nice to someone with whom you agree, but with someone with whom you disagree. Plus, there are some behaviors that are clearly wrong. Murder, molestation, spousal abuse, racism. Not all behaviors are equal, so not all ideas are equal. There's another version of tolerance from the Oxford Dictionary. The ability or willingness to tolerate the existence of opinions or behavior that one dislikes or disagrees with. This presumes disagreement. You think you're right, the other person's wrong, but you're still going to treat that other person with respect and civility anyway. Treating someone you don't agree with civility is praiseworthy. You get big points for degree of difficulty there. People have gotten the unfortunate idea that the only way we'll ever get along is if everyone assumes that no one's right and no one's wrong. And I think that standard is unlivable, even by the people who hold it. But ironically, it lowers the standard, as if we can't be civil to people we disagree with. But I say we can and we must be civil to people who don't agree with us. So this show will engage in civil and tolerant discussion of ideas respecting people with whom we disagree. But we will put ideas to the test, and that means we'll find some ideas true and some false. And finding them false is not uncivil, it's not disrespectful. It's consistent with civility. But what sorts of tests are we going to use? How can you support your views with good, sound reasons? And what constitute poor reasons? How can you win a sports argument with your friends? Husbands, how can you actually win an argument or two with your wife? How can we engage in social and political and religious discussions without them descending into chaos? Well, tune in next time and we'll discuss logic and argumentation. Now, feel free to share the link to the podcast of this show on social media. You can get that link from kciw.org. And feel free to browse some of the documentation we provide. We'll give you some links to some sources. Thank you for listening today. God bless all of you.
Opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
For more information about the music you heard on the preceding program, please go to our website, kciw.org/credits.